What is up, my friend? Welcome back to another episode of the Year of Plenty podcast, the show to help you get closer to your food source and learn the skills so that every year can be a year of plenty for you. As always, I'm your host, Paul D. Wieland, and today we're diving into a topic that's been making some waves in the food industry. We're talking about lab-grown meat. But before we get into the actual episode, I just want to kindly ask you to leave a 5-star review on the Year of Plenty podcast, either on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, especially if you're listening on Spotify. I'm trying to get those reviews up. It only takes like 5 seconds to do it, and it really helps with others being able to find the show. So if you have a short amount of time out of your day and you like the podcast, you get value from it, please consider leaving a review. You can also check out my blog on www.theyearofplenty.com. I have, like, for example, my ultimate foraging gear list on there with all the favorite tools I like to bring foraging. Then also consider joining my newsletter, which you can join at www.theyearofplenty.com/newsletter for monthly updates, email updates straight into your inbox of just content that's complementary to the stuff I talk about in the podcast. And now a quick word from our sponsor, Montana Block. And the best part is that they're providing a 15% discount code exclusively to Year of Plenty podcast listeners with the code Year of Plenty. Have you ever wanted a kitchen tool that not only looks stunning, but can also last a lifetime? Well, let me introduce you to Montana Block, a small family-owned business that creates exceptional wooden kitchen products. I'm talking about functional, high-quality, and unique end-grain butcher blocks and more. What sets Montana Block apart from others? Well, they pour their heart and soul into every single product. Each piece is meticulously crafted by hand using all American-made materials. How cool is that? And these aren't just ordinary cutting boards. They're kitchen masterpieces designed to withstand the test of time. Now listen closely, because this offer is really too good to resist. Montana Block is graciously granting you guys a fantastic 15% discount on their entire collection. Just use the code Year of Plenty at checkout on your website, which is www.mtblock.com, and treat yourself with a quality cutting board or one of their awesome wooden magnetic knife holders. If you take advantage of this offer, some of the money will kick back to the Year of Plenty podcast, so this is a great way for you to help support the show. And one more thing, Montana Block is committed to your satisfaction. If you ever need a repair, they're there to lend a helping hand, ensuring your beloved cutting board stays by your side throughout your entire culinary journey. And, you know, if you take good care of it, you can even pass it on to your kids or a friend or another family member. So why settle for mass-produced, potentially toxic, mediocre cutting boards when you can embrace the artisanal brilliance of Montana Block? Head on over to www.mtblock.com today and remember to use the code Year of Plenty to claim your exclusive 15% off. All right, that's it for the intro. Let's get into today's topic, which is lab-grown meat. Now, I know what you're thinking. Lab-grown meat? That sounds like something straight out of a sci-fi movie, right? But it's real and it's finally here. For years now, there was always this looming idea that one day we would all be eating meat that was grown in a lab with a petri dish and not on the farm. And recently, the FDA and then the USDA approved two companies, Upside Foods and Good Meats, to start selling their lab-grown chicken here in the US. But here's the real kicker. According to an article by Ali Francis, who is a writer for Bon Appetit, there are currently over 100 startups flush with capital working on everything from lab-grown, cell-grown beef to seafood, lamb, duck, pork, and much more. That's just wild to me. Before doing my research, I thought there would be like a handful of companies, but not 100. And there's actually a restaurant in Singapore that is already serving lab-grown meat to their customers. So I didn't even know about that. I thought this was still like kind of a sci-fi, like imaginary thing. I knew companies were working on it. I'd known that the prices were way too much and, you know, it would never really reach the consumers, but it's here and it's already being sold over in Singapore. Now, why would they do this? Well, a lot of the marketing from these companies revolves around, you know, altruistic goals like removing animal cruelty from the meat supply chain and being more sustainable. So they're saying by, you know, eating this lab-grown meat, it's just way better for the planet and society. Now, I think those are two great talking points that would definitely get lots of people to jump on the bandwagon. But later in this episode, we'll take a closer look at if that's actually true. Personally, I think that this race to bring lab-grown meat to the market is driven by something else. I think it's driven by the potential for it to bring in a ton of money in the future. Because having that many companies like trying to compete, you know, over a product that might not even be accepted by the general public kind of tells me that there's a chance for some serious profitability. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. And the reality is that meat consumption is expected to increase an absurd amount as the world's population grows. So they're probably banking on there being like a huge demand for this lab-grown meat. And I think that's a challenge for itself, and maybe lab-grown meat has a place there. But who knows? Like, some people probably have these, you know, altruistic goals at these companies, but I think overall, it's just about the money. So let's get into it. Imagine this, you're at your local grocery store and you see two packages of chicken, right? One is from the farm and the other one's from the lab. Which one would you choose? I know what I would choose, and that's the real deal. I would pick the chicken from the farm. And I like what nutritionist Diana Rogers said about it in an interview with the New York Post. When they asked her, you know, if she would eat lab-grown meat, she said, "I'd rather eat my own shoe." And I think I honestly feel the same. But, you know, that's just me. Everyone should be able to make their own decisions for themselves. Although, to be able to make those decisions, I think you should be aware of some things. So first of all, what is lab-grown meat even? And how is it made, right? If you start looking into lab-grown meat, you'll quickly see that it's given a bunch of different names, like cultured meat, cell-based meat, cell-grown meat, cultivated meat, and so on. And as this hits the market, you're probably going to see a bunch of these like labels on there, you know, a bunch of different names for it. Partially, I think that's to confuse the consumer a bit. But they all refer to quote-unquote meat that has been grown from animal cells and was cultured in a lab. So this means it's made in a lab using growth mediums and a bunch of lab equipment. So I'm really going to simplify this, but how it works is that scientists will take cells from a live animal via a small biopsy or from a fertilized chicken egg, for example, and these are usually stem, muscle, and fat cells that they extract. Those cells are then put into what's called a bioreactor that holds the so-called growth medium, which is like, imagine it as like a nutrient-dense solution of sugars, amino acids, vitamins, and other things that cells need to keep multiplying and growing. So basically, all the nutrients that, let's say, a cow would get from eating its food and drinking and all the stuff that it would have in its body to grow its cells, but it's all happening in a controlled environment in the lab. And after a certain time, once those cells are done growing, they're harvested and killed, and they kind of look like a pink slush that then is used to make an array of products, like a chicken breast, for example. Now, I'm sure the technology kind of varies a bit from company to company, and you're probably finding new ways to do this constantly, because there's already like patents on growing lab-grown meat out there. So if this stuff takes off, though, I guess that's what modern ranches and butcher shops are going to turn into. Labs that just kind of grow the stuff in a big bioreactor. I say that tongue-in-cheek, but who knows? We live in a strange world already right now. And with the technology just, you know, exponentially getting better and better, as you know, I can really see this kind of becoming a reality. Although, I personally don't want this to be a reality, and I have some concerns about lab-grown meat that I want to share with you. So the main big concern being that I don't want this to replace real meat. I think everyone should have a choice to choose between the real deal and then also this lab-grown stuff. But I really worry that once this takes off, we will eventually only have lab-grown meats in the grocery stores. I could see this leading to many more ranches and family farms shutting down, and us just having an even more centralized meat industry and food industry, which is definitely not what we want. Currently, lab-grown meat requires a lot of money to make, so it's only possible with funding from big corporations and investors and all that. If we were to transition to this stuff and away from like the real livestock production, what happens to the farmers? I think that's a good question to ask. Well, as is, what's likely going to happen is that money and power will move more towards the larger corporations and the rich and away from the farmers. And I'm sure farmers out there are already scared about this because this is definitely a nightmare for them. You're already struggling enough. I heard a quote recently that said, farmers feed the world, but can barely feed themselves. Let that settle in for a minute. Kind of fucked up situation that we live in, I think. And the big thing we need to realize is that when we lose the farmers, we also lose the know-how and skills to raise animals for meat production. When that happens, we're like solely dependent on huge production plants to provide the world with animal protein, like the best protein we can get as humans. And then what happens if those plants, like these production plants, can't operate anymore because of, like, let's say a cyber attack, for example, or an earthquake? That doesn't sound like a good future to me. And even worse, what if the government introduces some legislation to make real meat illegal because of some climate goals or some other, you know, reasons? Now, I know that sounds kind of extreme, but I really don't think it's all that unthinkable. So that's my one big concern. Another concern that I have is that this lab-grown meat might not be all that more sustainable than conventional meat production, even though that's like the main talking point for those that are promoting the consumption of lab-grown meat, right? Like the sustainability aspect and animal agriculture produces so much greenhouse gas emissions and so much CO2 and blah, 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 which we know isn't, it's true, but it's not to the amount that a lot of people in social media or even in news articles tout. But the companies and, you know, investors and people that are just proponents of lab-grown meat, they say that it's predicted to need less land, water, and produce less greenhouse gases than raising cattle on the farm, for example. But after doing my research, I really don't think that we know that yet. And I also don't think that we can just say that it's going to be more sustainable. And I say this because scientists recently brought a study to the public that shows quite the opposite. So we will get back to the episode in just a bit. I just wanted to jump in real quick to let you guys know how you can best support the Year of Plenty podcast. If you get value from the show, please consider doing a monthly donation on Patreon for as little as $2 a month. Otherwise, if you're more into the one-time donations, you can leave a donation for however much you think is fair over at my Buy Me a Coffee page. Both platforms will be linked in the episode description. Also, please share an episode with your friends or on social media. Doing that will let other foodies like you and I discover the show and come along for the ride. And finally, if you want to connect with me personally, head over to my Instagram, which is at Poldy Wieland. Follow me over there and let's get a conversation started. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much for your support. Let's get back to the episode. So this study is called Environmental Impacts of Cultured Meat, a Cradle-to-Gate Life Cycle Assessment, and it looked at the sustainability of retail beef versus cultivated meat, so versus lab-grown meat. And this was done by UC Davis. They do a lot of great studies in the agriculture world. And the study concluded that cultivated meat's environmental impact is likely to be orders of magnitude higher, not lower, higher than real beef based on current and near-term production methods. So a big issue with the current production methods is that the growth media that feeds the cells, that produces the lab-grown meat, allows it to grow, need to be highly refined and purified to pharmaceutical levels, actually. And this requires a ton of resources and increases its global warming potential significantly. Derek Risner was the lead scientist on the study I just mentioned, and he works for the UC Davis Department of Food Science and Technology. And he said that, quote, if this product continues to be produced using the farmer approach, it's going to be worse for the environment and more expensive than conventional beef production, end quote. And he says that because of the findings from his study that show that the global warming potential of lab-grown meat using these highly purified growth mediums that they are using right now is actually 4 to 25 times higher than the average beef found at a grocery store. So 4 to 20 times higher than the real meat. Just based on these numbers, and I'm aware that's just one study, but that doesn't seem all too promising to me. Although, to be fair, I do want to point out that in an online article published by UC Davis about the same study, they say that if the industry were to figure out how to make this stuff without these pharmaceutical-grade methods and pharmaceutical-grade growth mediums, the lab-grown meat will be more environmentally competitive. Now, note that they say competitive, not friendly, because based on those numbers from before, the 4 to 25 times higher than the average bee found at the grocery store, it doesn't seem more environmentally friendly. Now, in this case, like if they were to figure out how to do it without this pharmaceutical grade growth medium that requires all these inputs and is really bad for the environment, they calculated that the lab-grown meat's global warming potential could be between 80% lower to 26% above that of conventional beef production. Even though that does sound more promising, I think it's still like a huge spectrum, right? I mean, 80% lower or 26% higher than conventional beef production, right off the bat, that does not convince me that lab-grown meat will be more sustainable than real meat. Like, it's just, you know, that's just too big of a gap. And, you know, there was actually another analysis and report by a guy named David Humbert, who is a chemical engineer, and his report kind of spread through the internet and, you know, the farming community and whatnot. But in this report, he further questions the viability of lab-grown meat, saying that the actual facilities to grow the cells at global scale, like to grow them for the world, will require an insane amount of energy. And in his report, he identified three big challenges that we likely can't solve. And he thinks these are going to be like the three big challenges that are just going to be the end of lab-grown meat eventually. But these are, so the first one is the capital costs associated with building facilities to grow the cells in a sterile enough environment to prevent bacterial growth. So that's a big concern. It's like, it's all pharmaceutical, it's all done in a lab, while bacteria are in the environment, so we need to sterilize everything and keep everything super sterile. So that's the first challenge, the costs associated with that. The second one is the sourcing of amino acids and other nutrients needed to feed the cells. And then the third one would be growing the cells at high enough density in these bioreactors to achieve a similar cost as real meat. So to me, these seem like three pretty big challenges. And just the first one, the capital costs to grow these cells in a sterile enough environment to prevent bacterial growth, that one's a complete turnoff to me because, I mean, this means that, you know, this stuff is really grown, you know, with probably antibiotics and whatnot. And I'll get into more of that in a bit here. But I will link both the studies I just talked about in the episode description if you want to check them out yourself and kind of make your own picture of them. But as of now, just like reading all of this and doing all my research, I really don't think we can just say that lab-grown meat is going to be more sustainable or even comparable in terms of cost to us end consumers. And that brings me to my next big point, which is that currently lab-grown meat is super expensive. According to an article by Bon Appetit, the one I mentioned earlier, lab-grown meat would cost about $17 a pound. That is really not doable for most people. And who knows how much this stuff will go for at restaurants. Probably way more, just because of the hype around it. Oh, and I almost forgot one more thing about the environmental friendliness and sustainability of lab-grown meats, is how the growth mediums are being sourced. So the growth mediums are what this lab-grown meat or these cells are growing in. And it's well known that these cells need a lot of this growth media to multiply. It's basically like the food for them, right, that makes them grow. And like I mentioned earlier, the food usually comes in the form of amino acids, dextrose, vitamins, and so on. Now, where do these things come from? Well, the amino acids are often coming from soybeans and the dextrose from corn. So in order to grow these cells, you're still supporting industrial monocrop agriculture. And we know, like if you've listened to this podcast or you've done your own research, that these industrial farming methods, they lead to severe soil degradation, ecosystem diversity loss, and more chemicals in the environment. So yeah, it really doesn't sound all that more sustainable to me. Now, the third big point I want to cover is this big question of, is lab-grown meat truly cruelty-free? Because that's another thing that a lot of these pro-lab-grown meat people are saying, and it's something that the lab-grown meat companies are using in their marketing. Well, is it really more cruelty-free? Not really. Lab-grown meat relies heavily on what's called fetal bovine serum, which is the blood of unborn cow fetuses that they extract from pregnant cows after slaughter. So they kill a pregnant cow and extract blood from its unborn baby. That's pretty crazy. I mean, that right there is not cruelty-free to me. And the serum, like this fetal bovine serum, is basically the special sauce that has just the right combo of hormones and other stuff to make the cells flourish in the lab. So as of right now, they heavily rely on fetal bovine serum to develop the lab-grown meat. So how can some of these companies say that lab-grown meat, like across the board, is slaughter-free or even vegan when this is one of the main ingredients needed to make it? Doesn't make much sense to me. Now again, to be fair, the lab-grown meat makers are trying to find a substitute from what I was reading for this fetal bovine serum, and something already is existing out there, but it's still way too expensive to use at scale, so a lot of them are still using the blood from unborn baby cows. So wild to say. Now, beyond that, that's not the only cruelty that's part of the lab-grown meat supply chain. Well, beyond the fetal bovine serum, sometimes cells first have to be extracted from live animals via the form of a biopsy. Now, this is probably just a small biopsy, but still, like, animals are getting hurt, so it's not cruelty-free. Now, I don't think getting a biopsy is, like, as cruel as factory farming, don't get me wrong, but I still don't see that they can market lab-grown meat as being cruelty-free if that's how they're getting these cells. And with cattle especially, you know, we always think that cattle are in these lab, like, in these factory farms and living a horrible life, and yeah, there are some big CAFOs out there, some big like farms doing that. But for the most part, most cattle live a huge part of their life on pastures before they go to these feedlots. So just saying, like, yeah, I totally think factory farming is horrible. And that's why I try to hunt or fish and try to eat, you know, meat from local farms. Or if I eat meat, it's usually cattle. Because chicken and pork to me are like the worst when it comes to factory farming, so I kind of try to avoid those completely. But getting back to the point here, some lab-grown meats are made with cells that are extracted from fertilized eggs, and that is a lot less cruel. You know, I'm sure they still have to raise chickens, or they're still raising chickens in a factory farm setting and getting eggs from those chickens. I don't think they're getting the eggs from chickens that are raised in pastures, but it's a lot less cruel than taking the blood of unborn baby cows and killing the mom in doing so, or taking like a biopsy from the cow. Okay, so now you know that currently lab-grown meat is not totally cruelty-free and definitely not vegan. So the next thing I want to talk about are the potential health concerns from eating lab-grown meats. Could it actually be dangerous to humans? Now that's something that's being discussed out there, and I'm not a doctor, but there's no way I think we have all the answers already. I mean, this stuff hasn't even really hit the market yet, and not a lot of people have consumed it. I just don't think we have all that information to straight up say that this lab-grown meat has no health effects on humans whatsoever, which is what some of these companies are saying. And it's not like it's the first time that the food companies are saying, you know, oh, our product is totally fine to eat. There's no issue with it at all. Hint, hint, remember margarine? And some of those other industrial food products that we had to actually remove from the food supply chain here in the US decades later, because it turns out they were absolutely horrible for people's health. Now, there's a whole crowd of people that think that lab-grown meat is basically edible cancer. And I'm not going to go as so far as to say that that's true, but I think it's something to consider and look at. So actually, Dr. Sean Baker, who's a huge proponent of the carnivore diet, just made a video about this. In this video, he claims that the Center of Food and Safety published a public patent that shows some of the production methods for making lab-grown meat. And I looked at these patents. Obviously, they're super scientific and technical, and you know, I couldn't dive too deep. But the patent does explain that the cells used to grow lab-grown meat are often what's called oncogenic-like cells. I'm going to say that again. Oncogenic-like cells, which are similar to cancer cells in that they keep growing and growing. So there's cancer-like cells, really. So this continuous growing and growing is actually what makes a cancer cell so problematic. It's basically immortal. And the same seems to be for these cells used for lab-grown meat, if they have enough growth factors to stimulate them. Like if they're constantly being fed with this growth media, they're just going to keep growing and growing like the cancer cells. And Sean Baker in his video says that a 2010 article in Seminars in Pediatric Surgery showed that some of these growth factors that these cells are bathed in, like that are in the growth medium, can actually enter our bloodstream if we're exposed to them. So I think that's a pretty serious concern. Like we have, you know, cancer-like cells in us potentially, we have stem cells and whatnot. So what if these, you know, growth mediums somehow are in the lab grow meat and then get into the human body? Would that have an unexpected effect on us and potentially even promote cancer in humans? Well, the truth is that we just don't know yet because it has never been tested. And I think Dr. Sean Baker in his video brings up another great point, which is that these lab-grown cells don't have an immune system at all. So that's kind of important because that means that they have a really high vulnerability to bacterial, viral, and fungal contamination. And how do you keep these cells protected from all the contamination if they don't have their own immune system? Well, most likely you have to expose them to high levels of like antibiotics, antivirals, and so on. So that goes back to like the sterile environment that I was talking about earlier. And that is an issue because like we didn't already have enough of these, but this is one more thing that could lead to the development of antimicrobial resistant organisms. Like, you know, bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics, for example. And that's something that we definitely don't want. We already have way too much of it. Actually, the World Health Organization is calling, you know, this resistance in bacteria and viruses and whatnot a global health and development threat. And there is an argument, I think, to be made that with this lab-grown meat, you could be adding to that. So in conclusion here, could this lab-grown meat cause negative health effects and maybe even cancer? I don't know. But I definitely think we should tread lightly here and, you know, maybe just wait to bring this stuff to the market until we have more certainty. Like these companies always push, lobby and get the stuff to the market. And then just years later, we figure out that this process stuff is killing us. And that's something I think we should avoid. Now, I want to segue a bit, but one more big question I still have to answer for myself in doing all my research and whatnot is if these companies should actually be allowed to call their products meat or even chicken or beef. Like, should they be able to call it that? What do you think? I'd love to hear. Like, head over to Instagram, send me a DM. It's something I'm really still contemplating. And like, as a marketer, I understand why they want to do it, but as of right now, I don't think it's fair. And of course, I did some research into it, and an article by the New York Post mentions that Upside Foods, which is one of those companies that the USDA and FDA just approved to sell their chicken product here in the US, they say that their product is indeed real meat, digested by humans just like any meat coming from an animal. So that sounds good, right? But the thing is, as far as I could find in my research, none of these companies have ever released a nutritional profile of their lab-grown meat. So we really can't compare it to real meat on a nutritional level as of now. And looking into it, you know, a lot of the other people in the health space and whatnot, they were saying the same. Like, where are these nutritional profiles? Like, where is it? Like, we want to see it. But it's not there. That's why, you know, I'm not going to call it real meat right now because, I mean, I don't know. I'm not just not going to trust what they're going to say. I mean, I want to see some proof that it is truly nutritionally the same as an animal raised on the farm or in the pasture. And the thing is, we already know right now, I did a whole episode with Dr. Stefan van Vliet that you can listen to. Him and his team, they studied cattle that were raised in pastures all year long, on biodiverse pastures actually, versus cattle that were on feedlots eating corn. And there was a nutritional difference between those two. So I'd assume that this lab-grown meat probably doesn't pack the same nutritional punch as the real deal. But again, we got to test it. We got to see some evidence. And also, I touched on this earlier a bit, but the method that they use to make the lab-grown meat right now is really similar to the biotechnology used to make pharmaceutical-grade products. So is this stuff a food product or a pharmaceutical product? I think that's also a fair question to ask. And it's a question that the FAO and the World Health Organization discussed in a meeting earlier this year, actually. They published several reports on lab-grown meat, and one of them focused on the issue of terminology. They want the terminology to be clear before these products really hit the market and really take off at massive scale, so that us consumers aren't like confused or tricked by marketing messages, which I think that's actually a good thing you're doing. For now, they seem to have settled on the word cell-based food. So that's what they want to call this lab-grown meat, which I think is probably good. I mean, it's not saying meat, and it's clearly saying that it's coming from a cell. I think throwing the word lab in there would turn off some more people, but it also wouldn't be lying. So I think that would be the better option. I can see these companies already screaming about that, though. Like, we don't want to call our lab-grown meat. You know, it's going to look bad. But, you know, they're going to have to deal with that. And hopefully there's some regulation on what they can call this stuff. But who knows? All these food labels all there, all this food marketing out there currently doesn't give me high hopes that there will actually be some legislation or something to protect us and consumers. Now, on the bright side, in my opinion at least, there are already some people in power that are already pushing back against lab-grown meat in general. Like the Italians, for example. My ancestors, I'm half Italian, they just passed a bill to ban the production and marketing of synthetic food and feed. That's what they call it. They don't even call it lab-grown meat or cell-based food. They call it synthetic food. And I love that about the Italians because they're big proponents of protecting local food and food traditions, which I think is super important. And the World's Farm Organization is another group that is kind of coming out and talking about the risks here of this lab-grown meat stuff. And they just published a big letter to share their concerns. And I just want to read a quick excerpt from it that really resonated with me and that I think is also going to resonate with you. So they say that, quote, "The current and future challenges confronting farmers necessitate that the scientific community and all actors in the value chain cooperate in order to break down barriers, find innovative practices, and deliver results ready for adoption. Collaboration between farmers, researchers, and other stakeholders will help amplify solutions and mitigate the difficulties ahead. Increasing productivity and its stability by enhancing the resilience and adaptability of farming systems, sustainably utilizing resources in agriculture and increasing soil fertility are the critical issues for an ever-growing population to adequately, successfully, and sufficiently nourish itself. But to achieve these goals, it is imperative to continue investing in agriculture, focusing on those who have always defended and protected land, soil, biodiversity, and nature, the farmers. It is on these assumptions that the World Farmers Organization is embracing an approach to innovation that is bottom-up, science-based, and result-oriented, but rejects any attempt to replace the food resulting from the work of farmers with lab-grown food. And to further concentrate power in the value chains, dismissing the work of farmers and pushing consumers toward a single and homogenous dietary model which does not value the tradition, diversity, richness, quality, and peculiarities of each region of our planet." End quote. Now, I know that was a mouthful. That was a lot right there. And maybe not the best for podcast format. But I thought it was pretty powerful. And they're clearly also concerned about what I was saying earlier, like what will happen to the farmers when this lab-grown meat will hit the market at scale? And also, what about the access to a healthy and natural diet for us and consumers? Will that still be there? Will we have an option? Now, clearly, I'm skeptical about lab-grown meat. Thankfully, I can be out there hunting and learning the skills to, you know, raise my own animals like the quail right now, so that I don't have to rely on lab-grown meat from the grocery store if it ever comes that far. But I would love to hear your thoughts. Sadly, the podcast format doesn't really make it easy for me to engage with you guys. If you have your own thoughts and feelings about this, you know, definitely send me a direct message over on Instagram. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Maybe you have some knowledge that I don't have yet that I couldn't find during my research, and I'm definitely open to changing my opinions. But everything I just laid out for you is kind of like what tells me that lab-grown meat is not the way of the future, not where I want to go. And I want to end this episode with a quote from Thomas Locke that really resonated with me. He's a farmer, And he said that the answer is not going to be found by making fake meat in a vat. It's going to be found by re-embracing the laws of nature. And I could not agree more. As we navigate this brave new world of lab-grown meat, let's not forget the value of traditional foodways and ancestral eating. Let's not lose even more of our connection to the nature and the animals that provide us with nourishment. That's all for today, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey into the world of lab-grown meat. I hope you found it as fascinating as I did. I hope you're equipped with some arguments for and against lab-grown meat, even though I know a lot of what I pointed out was against it, but that's just from the research I found what kind of the vibe is right now. But you can make your own decisions, do your own research. I hope, though, that you found it interesting. Until next time, keep cooking, keep exploring, and keep striving for that year of plenty. All right, we've come to the end of today's Year of Plenty podcast episode. If you enjoyed this conversation, please share the episodes with your friends. Don't forget, you can get 15% off at Montana Block, which is www.mtblock.com. Montana Block is now sponsoring the Year of Plenty podcast. They make handcrafted, American-made, and grain butcher blocks, wooden cutting boards, wooden knife holders like magnetic knife holders, and a bunch of other cool things. So check out their website again at www.mtblock.com and use the code YEAROFPLENTY for 15% off. This way you're supporting Montana Block, American made. You're helping me with the podcast, helping me produce this content, and you're getting a discount. So really it's a win-win-win for everybody. And also, if you haven't already, leave that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and make sure to send me a screenshot to my Instagram, which is at Poldy Wieland, or to my email address, which is theyearofplenty@gmail.com. In return for leaving a review, I will send you my ebook with some of my favorite food preservation recipes in it. If you get a ton of value from the show, one more way to support it is by leaving a donation, either as a patron, you can become a monthly patron, and pay as little as $2 a month to support the show. Or you can go over to my Buy Me a Coffee page and leave a donation for however much you think this podcast is bringing you value. Finally, join my free monthly newsletter and I will send you monthly emails with more content that is complimentary to the podcast straight to your inbox. You can sign up for the newsletter at www.theyearofplenty.com/newsletter. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, my friends, let's keep exploring real food together and keep striving for that year of plenty.